The Tom Woods Show, episode 1647.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, all your friends think they know what went wrong in 2008, why there was deregulation, and we need more skulls cracked by the state to prevent that kind of crisis from ever happening again. Well, this is entirely false, and you can build up your ammunition against it by reading my free ebook, The Deregulation Boogeyman, over at regulationmyths.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here, joined today by Ayrton Parham, who has been doing something quite interesting. He's taken his talent as a singer, which gives him a good quality voice, and he's turned that into something interestingly entrepreneurial with an audiobook service he's been providing. And in the course of that, he read the great Harry Brown book that I mention on my email list from time to time, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World. And we decided to discuss that book here on the show because I think people may be familiar with the name Harry Brown because he ran for president on the Libertarian Party ticket some time ago, but they don't know as much about him as they should because I think he was an excellent communicator and also just a very, very smart and persuasive guy. And he's somebody we should know more about. And this particular book, I think, is quite valuable for a number of reasons. So I'm glad to have a chance to talk about it. So Ayrton, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, first of all, let's talk about that audiobook business. Because, of course, you know, Mr. Monetize over here is interested in that. What's the website and what's the idea behind it?
So basically, the idea is I've found works that are in the public domain. And then I go on Audible and I see if anybody has done a version of that or if they have done a version of that. A lot of times maybe they'll be hissy or of low quality. So then I will try to make a version that I think might be better for audiobook listeners. Then you can just upload it through Audible. It has a self-publish function called ACX. And it's a lot of work editing it. It's a lot of work recording it. But once you're done, you sort of have if you've picked the right title, you have a passive income stream.
I thought that was brilliant when you told it to me, really.
Oh, thank you.
Tremendous idea. So I'm sorry, did you say the website?
Yeah, it's acx.com is their self-publish function.
No, I mean, how do people...
Oh, me.
Do you have a site where people can see your offerings?
Well, if you go to Audible and you just type in my name, which is admittedly difficult to spell, A-Y-R-T-O-N, last name P-A-R-H-A-M, then all of my things will pop up just, I'm searchable through Audible.
Okay. All right. Well, you could, and in fact, you can help out the old Tom Woods Show if you go to tomwoodsaudio.com and you do that. It doesn't cost you an additional cent, but it helps keep the lights on over here. And you can find your audiobooks that way. It's a brilliant idea. I absolutely love it. So let's talk now about this particular one. First of all, what can you tell us about Harry Brown? People think of him as a politician because he ran for office. But that's not fundamentally what he was.
Yeah, that didn't come until a lot later in his life. Before then, he was a salesman and an entrepreneur. And then, actually, interestingly, when Nixon decoupled from the gold standard, he said to himself, my libertarian training, I know that this is going to cause certain economic changes. So he wrote a book called How You Can Profit from the Coming Devaluation. And it ended up becoming a bestseller. And so from there, he started writing a lot of books, eventually coming to How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, which is how he changed my life.
Oh, how about that? So
yeah.
You came across this book before the... So you did it as an audiobook because you had experienced it and you liked it. And all right, okay, so we're putting this on hold for a minute. I want to know exactly what the circumstances were. How did a book like this change your life? An out-of-print book, I assume.
Yeah. So I had heard about it. And then I finally found just a beat up paperback copy for $1 in a used bookstore. And I bought it. And I was probably, I must have been 17 or something like that. It was the absolute perfect time for it to hit me. And the truth is that when I started this audiobook business, I always had in the back of my mind, I'd love to reach out to whoever has the rights. And I'd love to do this book specifically because it's meant a lot to me and it's out of print. And I know that for people like me who prefer audio, I think that it could really extend its reach if it was available in an audio format. So yeah, it certainly came the other way around. I wasn't looking for opportunities. I started for this.
Right, right, right. Well, that's fantastic. All right, so now let's get back to Harry Brown, because yes. One thing I've pointed out on my in my newsletter a couple times is that he also wrote a book on sales called The Secret of Selling Anything. And again, that reminds us that the guy was a salesman, and he was a really good salesman. Now, I've read that book. That book was written long before the internet. So he's really talking about closing sales in person or over the phone. But it's not as if the ideas and strategies behind them aren't evergreen. They certainly are. But that just goes to show, first of all, that you can be a libertarian and be good at being a capitalist. You know, you can be good at selling things. That's a good thing. But also, his persuasiveness in promoting libertarianism was merely a subset of his general persuasiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly enough, The Secret of Selling Anything, as we speak, is the project that I'm working on now. So that will be available next.
Oh, how about that? Oh, tremendous. Okay. All right. So we have a little bit on Harry Brown himself. Now, when people look at a book like this and they see freedom and they know that the author's a libertarian, they probably think there's a major political angle to it. But that's really kind of the point of the book, is that it's an unfree world, and it's the implication is it's likely to stay that way. And maybe in 300 years it'll be better. Who knows? But you're not going to live 300 years. So what can you do in your life right now? So he doesn't take a political approach, and why not?
Well, it's interesting, especially I read this book as a young man, and when I was in that state of mind, I had all these dreams. I would be picketing. I would be screaming into a megaphone. And through this, I would make a society that would let me live how I wanted to live. And Harry's point in this book is you've got a long wait, right? And even if you could change the world, even if tomorrow we all went out and we established Ancapistan, right, the anarcho-capitalist utopia, don't you think somebody, some young man in that world would be trying to change that system? So even that's not going to be forever. So his point is, you can't bet your own happiness on waiting for the whole world to change, or even less so on your being able to change the whole world. And so he talks about, it's interesting that the title is Freedom and Not Liberty, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, because he points out that it's not enough to have the laws allow you to do what you want to do. There can be so many other things as well that are restricting your freedom. If you have a toxic family, or if you have a soul-sucking career, these things can be much more encroaching on your being able to live as you want to than the government. I think that's hard for us to accept, because a job is voluntary and a family to a certain extent can be voluntary, especially when you're an adult. But the fact is that if you don't get those things in order, and if you just dedicate all your time to trying to change the government and not really doing what they call self-care these days, then you're going to let freedom pass you by when it's available right now. You don't have to change everything in order to live free.
Now, we have to make sure and understand that he's using the word freedom in the colloquial sense in which people tend to use it. Freedom simply meaning the ability to live a life that you want to live, in which you're not constrained by, you're constrained by as few things as possible. So he doesn't mean it in the strict libertarian sense of absence of coercion in the political sphere, that sort of thing. He would mean, for example, if you were in a toxic relationship, this is that you're not fully free because you're tied down to something that's a burden to you, that's sucking the life out of you, that sort of thing, or a terrible job that you hate every day. I mean, yeah, technically they're not coercing you into the job, but in a sense, you're still not living the life you'd ideally want to live. So for him, in the colloquial sense in which he means freedom, this is an area of your life in which you could use more freedom. So I want to make sure everybody understands that's what he means. Just living the life you would ideally want would be achieving freedom in his use of the word.
Yeah, absolutely. And The distinction, I think, is important, because even if tomorrow you woke up in a government system that respects all your rights, that doesn't violate them, that doesn't collect taxes, you would still then have the business to do of actually setting about to do what you want. I mean, there's actually a punk song where he says, if freedom means doing what I want, don't I have to want something? right? So this is that sort of, it's a mindset, because a lot of, especially libertarians, we sort of bristle and we think, oh, well, the reason I'm not happy is because the government is keeping me from doing this, or I'm being taxed too much, so I can't afford that. But really, it's about a mindset shift a lot of times. And we just have to, you almost can assume liberty and live as if you're under liberty now, and you don't have to wait for the system to change, so you can embrace what you really want at the end of the road, which is freedom.
I doubt Harry Brown had this particular thought in mind, but if he had experienced it, I bet he would agree it's part of what he's talking about. And I'm thinking here of people who like to attack the joy people take in innocent pleasures, like, for example, organized athletics, professional sports. Now, I used to follow sports back when I was growing up in the 80s. I haven't recently, just because I have other things I'd rather do, but there are people who, if you watch the Super Bowl, which is something that normal Americans generally do, there are libertarians who will, you know, more or less say, ha, you stupid puppet of the regime. That's just what they want, is for you to be sucked into their bread and circuses. Enjoy your bread and circuses, sheep. You know, there are people like that out there. And they think they're free because they see the world clearly, but they're totally enslaved because they feel like they can't even enjoy a simple pleasure because there are politicians out there doing a bad thing. They're the ones who are imprisoned, not the people who are innocently watching the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's this sort of idea, and this is what Harry calls traps. The whole first section of the book is just, when you're first reading it, you think, oh, come on, get to the tips and tricks, right? Get to the ways to avoid this regulation, or the ways to set boundaries with this member of my family. But the first part of the book is really crucial, and he lays out all of these things that are trapping you that you might not even think of as traps. Like, for instance, he talks about the certainty trap and this idea that, well, I know everything. I have this perfect dogma all worked out, and I never need to learn anything else. That's denying you so many opportunities, and very similar to what you're saying. Yeah, this sort of idea that, well, the idea that things that give you pleasure are frivolous and you shouldn't even bother with them. It's a trap that you've put around yourself. You've built a wall that's higher than any government could ever build.
And that actually reminds me of one of his specific points about, and you noted this to me in an email, about your own emotional hang-up. So if you are a jealous person, you're putting the shackles on your own ankles when you do that, because now you're making your own satisfaction dependent on how somebody else is doing. And you're chaining yourself down. Or if you're full of hatred for other people, there are people out there, I call them the loser brigade, who don't like me. And a couple of them I've blocked on Twitter, but generally I mute people so that they're still yapping at me and I'm just automatically ignoring them because I can't see what they're saying. And that really annoys them more. So I prefer that to blocking. But even the ones I've blocked, if you log out of Twitter and you just go directly to my Twitter feed, you can still see the tweets. So I know there are people I've blocked who go out of their way to log out of Twitter to read my Twitter feed so they can monitor it for unapproved thoughts, of which there are many on my Twitter feed. And I think to myself, my gosh, you actually think you're sticking it to me? I feel sorry for you that you can't just go about your life. You have to monitor Tom Woods' Twitter feed. I mean, how much of a loser are you? I mean, I didn't just come up with the term loser brigade at random. Like, that's a problem. Or even, as you say, always having to have the last word and be always right. Well, in a way, that's a kind of a constraint you're placing on yourself, that you're never going to solve all the problems of the world. You're never going to answer all the people who are wrong. You're never going to win every argument. You have to find your happiness on another plane from that, or it's your own fault that you're unhappy at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll do you one better. The people who follow your Twitter account and they just seethe about everything you're saying, there's a lot of people who do that with the president, like be he the last administration or this administration. And those people who spend, you know, 4 hours a day listening to talk radio and thinking about it, and especially these people who let it interfere with their family life, they just ruin Thanksgiving because they have to proselytize their opinion to everybody there. This is setting up boundaries to their own happiness. They're allowing these people to rent all the space in their brain, and there's nothing left over for them to actually look at themselves and say, hey, what do I want? how can I get it? And how can I get it without having to change anybody else?
There are a lot of other things in this book that Harry Brown says you need to disengage from if your aim is to live a life worth living, is to live the kind of life that would bring you happiness and that would bring you freedom, let's say, in the fullest possible meaning of that word. So let's get to some more of those after we take this quick break. Hey, everybody, my daughter Veronica is with me today. I've been telling you guys about Skillshare for a long time. One membership gets you access to thousands and thousands of classes. These are classes that can make you a more attractive employee because you have more skills. It can give you a skill that can help you start a business even. And it can also just help you cultivate a hobby more enjoyably. And I want to talk to Veronica about a few classes she's been taking. Now, Veronica, how old are you?
15.
All right. Obviously, that was just for the sake of the folks. I do know my own daughter's age. Tell me what classes you've been taking at Skillshare.
Mainly art and a bit of sewing. So like I did anatomy for the art and then the art of doodling. And then for the sewing, it was like how to sew a circle skirt.
And about how long are these classes?
Some are like 30 minutes, some are an hour, some can go on for a little longer.
Would you say these classes were a good use of your time, that you learned something valuable from them?
Yes, because with the art of doodling, it helped me how to, you know, get creative with the things that I had or with certain themes. And then for the sewing, I can now picture in my head what I want it to look like and execute it better than what I was doing before.
Thank you, Veronica. Well, folks, Skillshare is running an amazing offer for our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for free. That's access to thousands and thousands of classes for free for 2 months. To cash in on that amazing offer, head over to Skillshare.com/woods right now. That's Skillshare.com/woods. All right, give me some other examples of things that Harry Brown in this book says you got to disengage from in order to claim freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned families. That's a big one. Obviously, families can be a great source of strength. I love my family very much. But I also know people who were in very toxic situations, situations where the way they behave and the way they dress and the way they live their life were all under very close scrutiny, more so than any government auditor could ever do. And I'll go even one further here. I think Harry mentions the idea of rights as being a sort of trap. And I know this is going to be very controversial. We're all good Rothbardians around here. But this idea that, well, it's my right, so somebody else can't violate it. And I'm going to go and I'm going to proclaim on a mountaintop, I have the right to my property. Yeah, but meanwhile, somebody's breaking into your house and stealing your stereo. You would have been better off getting just a security system and shutting up about rights than getting all worked up into a frenzy about what, you know, your natural rights are. It's not that they don't exist or that they... or that they're not even important, but as a tool for actually securing your own freedom, they're not very useful. I can't think of the last time I was in a personal argument, let's say, and I said, well, you have to treat me with respect because I have rights. Yeah, that didn't make them treat me with respect. It was totally, I might as well have said nothing during that interval. So this idea of rights, it can be very fun to think about, and it could be that it's very true and very important. But in your dealings with other people, and especially with the government, as we've seen, just stating what you think your rights are, or even focusing on what your rights are, can be a huge block to just, if you get rid of that mindset, you stop looking at, okay, what are my rights are? How am I being violated? You start thinking, okay, what can I do personally to either keep this person from engaging with me or make it worth their while to do what I want them to do or to just extract myself from the situation?
Some people will come back and say, here he is saying you can live a satisfactory life, a very fulfilling life, even if the political system you live under is terrible. But he did run for office. So how do we square that circle?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first read the book, I kept waiting for that part. And it does come. It comes at the very end. There's an afterword because he wrote the book 72, I think it was, or maybe it was 71. And then he ran for president in 96 and 2000. So obviously, He even says in the book at one point, he goes, look, don't take anything that I'm saying as some sort of gospel or written in stone. He goes, you have to even trust that I might change my mind. You know, the great thing about the book is he says, look, don't just believe me because I said it. See if it makes sense to you. And maybe in a couple of years, this won't even make sense to me. So specifically, yeah, he mentions this as an example. He says, look, he says that he thought that political prospects looked better than they did back when he wrote the book. Secondly, he said that government encroachment had gotten worse, so it made more sense to do something. But third, and I think most importantly, he said, look, even if I lose the campaign, and which he, of course he did, the next morning, I'm not going to wake up and be any less free. Essentially, he wasn't betting his happiness and his freedom on this campaign or allowing anyone in his movement to bet their happiness and freedom on this campaign. He did it because it was something interesting to him. He thought it was a good challenge. He thought maybe he could help people. But the point is that losing that bet didn't really set him back any. He still was able to live how he wanted to live even after that was over. So political action, as long as you enjoy it and as long as it brings you even a sense of fulfillment beyond just, I mean, it can sound like we're talking about hedonistic pleasures, but there's room for sort of spiritual fulfillment or things that feed your soul. And as long as you're not using politics as a means to an end, but it actually is the end to your happiness, then there's no problem with that, at least in Harry's worldview.
Let's think about today and the Harry Brown message today. I'm sure if he were around today, he would say it's more necessary than ever, especially because of obviously just how toxic the political sphere has become, but also with the advent of social media, the time, and I am as guilty of this as anyone, that we spend fruitlessly arguing with people whose confirmation bias will make it impossible for them ever to see your point of view. It is absolutely fruitless. Now, I guess it's true. Sometimes people observe the debate and you're crushing the person. Maybe that sways that person. Maybe. But in my case, for example, wouldn't it be a lot better for me to spend that time making a YouTube video that would be viewed by 100,000 people? And I could make that video in 1/10 the time it takes me to type out this argument. You know, we get sucked into things that are making us angrier, more on edge, and that are sapping our productivity and our energy for no benefit. And the things we could have been doing with that, it's a total loss. It's a total loss. So you were talking about the case of that student who gave all this money to Bernie that he couldn't afford to give. Give me that example and how the Harry Brown advice might have helped.
Yeah, so there's this internet meme rolling around, and I don't actually know for sure if it's true or not, but I know enough people that it very closely describes that I know that it's an example worth talking about. There's this meme going around of, guys, I'm really panicking. I took out as many student loans as I could, and then I gave them to Bernie Sanders. And I thought, this is a sure bet because he's going to win and he's going to cancel student debt. So I really lose nothing. And then now I'm in this situation where, oh, my dad's going to kick me out of the house and I've ruined my life. I have all this debt I can't possibly pay back. And I look at this example and I know people like this. You see them, especially after Bernie dropped out. There are a lot of people who really bet their happiness on Bernie winning. This phenomenon of, because your candidate lost, going out and screeching at the heavens and seeing the world as this sort of cosmic joke on you, because your political thing didn't work, because you personally weren't able to change the world. And I think this is such an important message, the message in How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, especially for these times, because we can all get so hung up on pinning our hopes on these politicians. And I even as libertarians, I think we have this instinct that that's not right. But sometimes we do it the opposite way. We go, gosh, I would be happy right now if it weren't for Trump's such and such policy, or if it weren't for Obama. And it's just like that kid who, oh, I bet everything on this politician, or I bet everything against this politician. It's such a indirect way of going about to achieve the life you want to live. Why not take it out of the politician's hands, put it in your own hands? It's a lot easier than you might think.
That is some good stuff. So I want to make sure people have a chance to grab this thing, but I want them to grab the Ayrton version Okay, I want them to get the audiobook because this is one of these books that can easily be consumed as an audiobook. I'm a fan of audiobooks, but not for all books, at least in my case, because if they're very technical or they involve long chains of reasoning, it's much better for my comprehension and the speed of comprehension for me to see it written out on the paper. But a book like this that's more general advice about life, it's like someone's just talking to you in the car. And so I think it really, really is quite suited to the audiobook format. So I'll have a link, basically just tomwoodsaudio.com, and then you're going to go and type in How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, and you'll be able to listen to this thing. And again, with Audible, if you haven't joined before, you get a free audiobook when you join. So if you join it, you get this one. Ayrton still gets his royalty. Even if you decide not to stay as a member of Audible, you still get to keep your free book. So you definitely want to check that out. Any parting thoughts, bits of wisdom from this book you want to share with us before we wrap it up?
Yeah, I want to take this opportunity to really emphasize that this personally changed my life. I'm not here as some sort of salesman for, not that there's anything wrong with salesmen, of course, but I'm here, this is a testimonial, you know? The reason why I did this book wasn't because, oh, I thought it was a good business opportunity. I sought out doing this audiobook because it was so meaningful to me, you know? I was what, there's the Billy Joel song, An Angry Young Man, where I was this politically focused and it was all about, I was going to take on the world and I was going to win. And then along comes this simple little book written in very plain language that just details how your life is already yours. You don't have to wrestle it back from people in Washington, D.C. All you have to do is just accept it. The responsibilities that come with it and the opportunities that come with it. And it's really made a big influence in how I think and in my mental well-being and in my going out into the world and how I am able to live for things that are important to me and that make sense to me and that give me pleasure.
Well, there you go. I mean, nothing wrong with that. There are a lot of people who struggle through impossible situations who could stand to take this advice to heart. And as I say, a lot of times the problems that people face are really self-imposed. I mean, yes, it can be that you've let yourself have your soul sucked out of you by a cubicle job for too many years, and that's sort of on you. But sometimes it's our own attitudes, it's our own ways of looking at the world in which we fashion a prison for ourselves. And Harry Brown here has the keys. You know, he's staging a jailbreak. But in order to do that, you have to cooperate by reading or better yet, listening to this book. And so I'll have a link, tomwoods.com/1647, for you to do exactly that. And Ayrton, I appreciate your efforts on this. This will definitely help some people that you've done. This will definitely change some people's lives for the better. And that is a terrific thing. So thank you for that and for talking to us today.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor, really.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.